Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, Dean Haspiel and Tim Hall join us for a discussion about indie comics, and digital novels, and the questions of free content versus paid content. Dean is the founder of the indie comics online community Activate, which represents dozens of great cartoonists doing free serialized work. And Tim has launched a new literary website called Undie Press, which includes serialized versions, which includes a serialization of Haspiel's first novel. Undie Press has plenty of written, audio, and video content, and it's all free. Hall and Haspiel are big believers in the notion of giving away free content, leading to growing an audience for more paid content, and they explain their views in our talk. Dean also tells us about a bunch of projects from his Emmy Award-winning work on the HBO series Bored to Death, plus new books for Vertigo, Marvel, and IDW. We also talk about the death of Harvey Pekar this past summer and Dean's close association with the indie comics legend. Word Balloon is brought to you by Audible.com. For you, the listeners of Word Balloon, Audible is offering a free audio download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. There are thousands of books to choose from at Audible.com, and one of the best ones is The 10-Cent Plague, The Great Comic Book Scare and How It Changed America, from David Hajdu, narrated by Stefan Rudnicki. This is a documentation of the scare that really drove horror and crime out of the comic book business, Senate hearings that happened in the 50s, but really even it starts decades before that, and David really provides an excellent history of this entire problem and the consequences that it cost the comics industry. You can get this book for free and download it. It works on any platform you want, and all you have to do is sign up for a free 14-day trial for Audible.com. To download your free book today, go to audiblepodcast.com/wordballoon. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/wordballoon for your free audio book. Well, it's good to talk to both of you guys, fine veterans of Activate now. Tim, it's been over a year, and Dean, the founder of Activate, so thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jen.
And, you know, we tried to record something live at Quimby's, the bookstore in Chicago, and it was an awesome conversation, and technology screwed us up. So hopefully everything looks like it's working all right, and I've got a running thing here, so there should be no excuses this time.
Good.
Okay.
Actually, I was trying to remember what we spoke about, and I know that we had just done something with the Activate Primer just come out.
Yes.
And did a reading, and Tim... read up from Up with the Positivicals. You had a really cool presentation, and then we, I think, talked about something technological. Do you remember, Tim, at all what it was?
I don't remember where we went on to after that. We sort of talked about that other stuff, but I don't remember where it went on to.
Well,
after
I remember.
That.
So that's all right. I got the brain cells. I still remember because it was about the digital world, and a lot has changed since that conversation. I think the iPad came out. And, you know, I was still just thinking how would, you know, like comic book art look on a screen no bigger than a baseball card. And that problem has gone away. And now, we're weeks, if not days away from the Droid tablet to compete with the iPad. And first I should ask Dean, because one of your places to put digital comics, Zuda, kind of folded. And, what does that do for fans of Street Code who maybe aren't as, you know, up to date with what's going on? Tell us what's going on with Street Code since the dissolution of Zuda.
Right. Well, what happened was, Zuda went from web comic to digital comics. And for a while now, I've been trying to figure out what's the difference. And the difference, I think, is delivery. You know? It's a delivery system. So actually now when I say the term digital comics, I almost think of it as being an upload or a download or, some kind of phone telecommunication delivery system that can go down into your little box, whatever that looks like, whether it's an iPhone, an iPad, a Droid, your game station. And because I have none of that technology at my fingertips, I still just function on a laptop. In fact, I have HBO, and I don't have cable TV. So I'm kind of, like, left behind all the time around, and it's getting annoying. So I can't watch Bored to Death when I work on Bored to Death, and I can't now look at Street Code on my phone because I don't have that technology on my phone.
My God.
Meanwhile, if you can't beat him, join him. So I guess it's really smart of Zuda to have made that transition from web to digital. And I was happy to discover, actually, one thing at Comixology, I can look at Street Code as a webcomic on my laptop.
Okay.
So that function still exists. The only difference is now is it's monetizing as well as being, you know, again, distributed through this technology that everyone is using. And at first I thought it was a technology to ignore each other, but really it's just a way to access everything that's cool, I guess. And you know what? Tim follows this stuff a lot more closely than I do, so maybe Tim has some good thoughts.
Yeah, I want to know what you think, Tim, and I will get to the Activate stuff too, but you know, what has your experience been so far with digital comics?
I'm only a couple of steps ahead of Dean. I still have a first-gen iPhone that I hacked into, so I didn't have to. I jailbroke it pretty early on and paid the fee, so I didn't have to. I don't know, it saved me about $3,000 in monthly charges from AT&T. I just do a pay-as-you-go thing. But anyway, that kind of has locked me out of the whole app store and all that stuff.
Okay.
And all that. So I actually don't use much of that stuff or do any of it yet. I mean, in the general sense, though, I mean, you know, that's been the big problem from the beginning. You know, everyone complaining about the World Wide Web and, oh, how do we make money on it and this and that. And, you know, obviously, I mean, the app revolution or the app bubble, coming app bubble or whatever, is certainly a great way to do it. And I understand the desire, but I think there's going to be as much of a sort of app bubble as there was sort of a dot-com bubble. And, you know, most of this stuff isn't going to fly. They're going to get a tiny bit of revenue, and they're going to lose 90% of their readership. Not all of them. Some of them are going to succeed tremendously. You know, I mean, it's not like, oh, this, you know, I did interviews about 2 years ago for my book, and I was on some morning talk show things. They leaned a little bit right, and they kept saying, so let's talk about this internet fad, you know, this internet fad. You know, that was sort of the right-wing talking point at that point. But you know, but it's not a fad, but I don't know. I'm not there.
But speaking of which, Tim, like, somebody was joking with me yesterday, or maybe they were telling, you know, something that was half-truth, which is when the internet first started, nobody believed it was going to be successful. So they started giving a lot of things for free away on the internet, and now we're trying to figure out how to charge on the internet. You know, it's kind of like we messed up, or they messed up, or something happened where it is the source that everyone goes to get their information and to be social and everything else. And it's kind of like backfired in our faces because now we're struggling to figure out, like, we've been giving away for free for so long. You know, how do you make a living at it? And I don't know if Tim is aware of the speech that Mark Waid tried to give at the Harvey Awards.
I wanted to get into that, Dean. I was hoping you were there, and I know you've responded to it online, so please go ahead.
Right. I mean, just to make a slight segue to that, Mark Waid basically delivered some kind of an abstract at the Harvey Awards as a keynote speech. And, you know, he was nervous, and I was trying to follow his line of logic, and I actually agree with most of what he was trying to say, and he'll admit that he failed at succeeding in what he's trying to say. And thankfully, he did put up online, I think today,
yes,
the actual speech that was supposed to be presented. And I agree with, you know, what Mark is saying. And I think that most people agree that, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. You know, people are going to pirate, you know, content. People are going to try to get things for free. But, you know, let's try to figure out how that works and what we can do and realize that that's part of our culture right now. And you know, for me, what's been great is with Lisa to Activate and putting stuff up online for free is it's been my resume. It's been my marketing tool. It's been branding Dean Haskell and whoever else, you know, piggybacks me and whoever else I can piggyback at a place like Activate. And so it's only actually served me. I've been giving away my comics for free for 4 years now.
Yes.
And it's only gotten me more work. So maybe I'm a bad example. Maybe I'm an anomaly. Maybe I'm a great example. I don't know. But there is something to giving stuff away for free. because I think what it does is it builds a loyalty, it builds a fan base, and it builds almost a demand to turn it into something that people will pay for. I think what the internet is doing is allowing a distribution model to cut out, you know, certain middlemen. But then if you can design something and make it really pretty and print it and package it in a way, you know, we still have to give each other gifts, you know. And one of the jokes I made online was that you can't gift a gift, you know. You know, we still have holidays and birthdays and stuff. And, you know, we still like to covet, you know, dead tree, as it were. So,
well, and I do think in particular art is going to be something that I think still needs to be a tangible thing as opposed to a digital file. And I wonder if comic books fall under that as well. I mean, it's much more satisfying hanging a piece of original art on your wall than it is to have it as a screensaver, for example.
I agree with you, but I don't think that's for us to see in the future, honestly.
I can appreciate that as well.
You know, I think, honestly, like, if what I've seen on an iPad or whatever the next cool thing is, if it, you know, I mean, look at the colors on an iPad. You can get more colors, I think, that way than you can in print. Meanwhile, there is an art difference. So there's arguments for both.
And, Tim, you know? your point, too, Tim, about apps. I've been listening to a lot of the tech shows, and I understand what you're saying, too, about that the app is kind of the delivery system of the moment. But in some ways, the app, as we've already seen, it transcend from the iPhone to the iPad, might actually be that delivery system that can go from platform to platform. And, you know, in fact, as we're speaking, Apple today introduced a new iTV and or Apple TV system that is a little cheaper and, you know, is kind of closer to some of the other internet television technology that's been being introduced lately. But that seems to be the suggestion. It's kind of like back in the old days when they had disposable razors, they would give the razor away for free, but they kept charging you for the blades. And
right.
and I wonder if that's kind of what's going to happen, where the apps will be for free, but if you want new content, that's the way to make money, is using the apps. What do you think of that, Tim?
Like I say, I really don't know. You know, anybody, if you want to be made make a fool out of yourself, try making a prediction in this type of technological market. I'd be more comfortable telling you, you know, like who's going to win the 2012 presidential election, for God's sake. No, I don't know. It's one of those things that's too tough to call. But I will say, maybe going in a segue in the other way, I'm launching a new online magazine called Undie Press.
Okay.
Undie, like undies that you wear, U-N-D-I-E. Sort of a contraction.
Like skibbies.
Yeah, like it was a contraction of underground and indie when I started. It was my own little publishing imprint, my own little personal press, and now after about 5 years, I finally wanted to develop it into something bigger, so it's going to be a magazine. Dean is running his first novel on it, serialized. And the point is, the thing is, it's all based on serialized streaming content, some multimedia, some podcasting, maybe some video. But anyway, the point is, I'm kind of going the other direction with it. Like I'm offering free advertising on the site. You know, that's traditionally, like, the big thing. Everyone says, you know, you got to sell ads. And they put those ugly Google things everywhere. You know what? Like, I'm taking Google down. Fuck Google. Like, I'm putting those cocksuckers out of business. The free ad revolution is coming. Fuck the pay-for-play apps. Fuck the, you know, that distribution model. Excuse me, I know we're on the internet.
No, you
with
can
this
say anything
podcast,
you want.
So I can say whatever the hell
say
I want.
Say whatever you want, Tim. It's all right.
It's like being on the Howard Stern show.
Exactly.
You know? You know, absolutely. I mean, I don't have any problem with the technology, because I'm a technologist. I love it. I love all technology. I've seen how print-on-demand has evolved and all these other things.
Sure.
I've been online for, I don't know, 17 years now, since the 93 or something. I mean, you know, so I'm pretty early adopter with this stuff. But I'm just going 100% the other direction. And actually, one of the people I'm doing a monthly interview series, and one of the people I'm interviewing in a couple of weeks is Richard Stallman, who developed the GNU operating system, which was the first free software, you know, OS to combat, you know, the closed systems of Microsoft and Apple and the rest. And, you know, it's now been transformed into what we called Linux.
Sure.
But really all Torvalds did was create just the kernel that all the other pieces could really function really tightly and well together. He kind of cracked the kernel of the code, which was the sort of the central command center of the code. But Richard Stallman really invented this whole free software. And he's a revolutionary, and it's about freedom and getting the, just resisting these closed systems. Is an iPad app going to work on a Droid?
No.
No. You know, maybe some of them are going to be based on the browser or the HTML, certain things, but no, it's still, that's where I ultimately think it's going to fail, and I think we really need to look at how free, not just open source, but actually free models actually can benefit, not just in a utopian way, but I think like what Dean said about building his name and his brand, I mean, what is that worth? What is the value of that to someone's career?
Well, that's what they're trying to figure out now, is what is the value of any of this stuff, you know,
yep.
Movies, songs, you know, lyrics, literature, comics, what is the value of Paris Hilton's snapshot? I have no idea. But I do know that we are the content makers, and I don't care what you build, if there's nothing to fill those holes, those gaps, that, you know, void, none of those apps are going to mean anything, you know? These delivery systems will mean nothing. So we do need to figure out, as the content makers, our own value and maybe start to tell them what we're worth. Because we keep relying on other people telling us what we're worth, and that's where we have to take back, you know, that concept. Again, I don't know how to make that happen, but, you know, we have to remind ourselves we are actually how in control of
yes. This. No, I agree with all of that. And guys, I mean, you know, I'm a content provider as well, so I'm in the boat with you. And I mean, it's a different product. But no, you're right. All of us are trying to figure this out. How much, Dean, you've obviously spoken to, and it's been tangible proof of the level of, you know, you're getting jobs through what you've, you know, done, putting your stuff out there. Tim, can you say the same thing? Have you built this online audience that is following you in the books that you put out and the various, you know, projects that you're doing?
Oh, definitely. I'd say. When I first started out self-publishing, just my books themselves, because I've been publishing newspapers and other print stuff for about 15 years now, but when I started really doing my book seriously and finally felt confident enough to kind of start this publishing thing about 5 years ago, 90% of it was hand sales. You know, I was working at the Apple store at the time briefly, part-time, and, you know, on the floor there and meeting people and friends, and then at book fairs and small press fairs.
Sure.
And anyway, then it moved on to Amazon, took up the bulk of my sales, you know, for a couple of years. And now, you know what? 90% of my sales is through Facebook and, you know, other, like, social media stuff like that, or leads generated through various Twitter or and also Activate was definitely a big boost. You know, got a lot of views on my little crazy serial there. But that was also, they had another community. But through, but that's still kind of a social networking thing when you think about it. It was a community, you know,
sure.
It's a community site, a community creators giving it away. And, yeah, most of my book sales the past couple of years have come through things like that. And Amazon accounts for, you know, 1% now.
Interesting.
When I first launched Activate, and I am no kind of guru. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Half the time I have to take off my shirt and win an Emmy just to get fucking attention. But with that in mind, when in 2006, I used this equation called the 3C equation, which was creation or creators, community, which is hella important. I can't stress how important it is to have community. And the third C was culture. And culture was the thing I couldn't identify what that could be, whether it's technology, whether it's, you know, the zeitgeist, it's what's going on in the world. But culture is the third part of this 3C equation. And I think that's, as long as you can identify those three things or keep, you know, moving and shaking that stuff, then I think you have a good shot at being your own boss and making a living at the content you wish to sell and share.
How have things gone now? You put out not only the online community and site of Activate, but you also, at the end of last year, released the Activate Primer, and then further, we saw the documentary that you were taking around from, you know, at stores.
Right.
Has that helped build the community over at Activate?
Oh, it's definitely helped the community. I mean, I'm always trying to think of new ideas. I mean, and to be honest, I've been so inundated with work that Activate kind of is a site that I visit now. I mean, and that's kind of cool to be able to click on a site that you help create, and then it's still moving. Now, yes, am I still kind of an overseer? Yes. Is there a CEO of Activate? No. Activate is kind of like a co-op, and it's what you put into it that you get back from it. And that's what I'm proud of about the actual website or the collective or whatever it is. I don't even know how to identify it properly. But, you know, that's what I think Tim is doing now with Undie Press, is he's doing his own Activate, but he's doing it with literature. He's doing it with sound. And the thing that's been a crime since Activate launched in 2006 is I can't believe how there haven't been more communities like this spreading like wildfire. Like, every week I get someone else sending me an unsolicited submission to be part of Activate, and we're a curated site. You know, we're not a publisher. You know,
sure.
Everyone has this idea that we're like some kind of imprint or something. We're not. We're just a bunch of people trying to make something happen and taking what we learn and turn it into something. And I'm just kind of surprised that there haven't been more. I mean, yes, there's this, if we're going to keep with webcomics, there's Transmission X.
Sure.
Other sites have tried to do it, like the Chemistry Set, but it's just, I'm just in shock that there isn't a deluge of Activates out there, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, like Penny Farthing, obviously, I think they've still stayed strong. And,
right.
Well, yeah, but now, like you were saying, though, now, Tim, with your venture, you say it's starting in 2 weeks. Will it just be online accessible through any internet-connecting device, I'm assuming, then, right?
It's just a website now. I don't have any special apps or other technology, but I've picked a design and a layout that is lends itself as a little friendly in terms of the graphics and the sort of entry points into the various stories and stuff. It's just, it's very graphical, it's very clear, it's very, you know, it's not just like, you know, little blog style text.
Sure.
We'll tap, double tap from your phone and try to turn it sideways and then look and squeeze it in this. I try to make it, the template and the look of it a little more friendly for those devices, but now at this point there's nothing special in terms of that. You know, it's not an app. It's just a website, and you know, there is a print. I am working on a little print component of it that's just still kind of in development, but that I would just distribute around. But that's
as a promotional tool, right?
Yeah, basically. Kind of as a promotional thing.
Sure, that makes sense. Is it going to? How often will it update? Then will it update weekly? Is every creator on there going to update at their own pace? How's that going to work?
I'm doing it. I'm acting as kind of the editor, publisher, but I've got content running. The two main updates, it's like the 1st and the 15th of each month, and then some features are monthly, some are biweekly, and then one thing so far, I'm releasing an audiobook of my last novel that, because it has, you know, about 30-something chapters, I'm just going to be updating that weekly. But it's really twice a month.
Is that Full of It that's coming to come out as an audiobook?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. And I want to talk about Full of It because I think, you know, small, you know, underground newspapers and, you know, small press like that, magazines in general, it's interesting. I just spoke to Mark Miller, and he's just starting his new magazine, Clint. And I said,
right.
What a strange time to start a paper magazine in an economy that seems to be moving away from print. And I said, there's got to be a digital component to it. And he said, no, because the British market is very different from the American market in the little shops all having a very strong distribution system. And he said it's less ground to cover. And plus, you know, he just feels like while everyone's retreating, it might be a good time to move forward. And I wonder what your thoughts are writing books like Full of It.
Tim, that's you.
Yeah, right. Well, how do you mean? In terms of
Well, just the environment. And like you say, now I know you're releasing this as a digital magazine and stuff. And you say, you know, you're going to have a print, like kind of like the Activate Primer, an introduction to the content that you guys are going to be serving up over there. But, yeah, tell me, you know, what...
Well, I mean, with Full of It, that was... That actually is kind of part of the Undie Press mission, at least for now when we're launching, because it is about a little, you know, struggling sort of underground newspaper at the beginning of the Internet age, kind of mid-90s, you know, when it really took off, the World Wide Web. And... you know, kind of, I guess it's kind of nostalgic in one sense, but it does seem to be coming around. I do know the English market's different. There has been a new trend of people turning web and blogs and things like that into little newspapers, like readers, you know,
yes.
like the best of the web or our friends' blogs and stuff. And my little print component is going to be small. It's going to be much more hand-sized, portable type thing. It's going to be just more like excerpts and various, you know, features from the website. It's not going to be like a reprint of the whole thing or individual novels or stories. But, yeah, full of it, it's kind of, you know, I love those aspects of the culture and the things that have suddenly been swept away, like, you know, newspapers. Dean's writing about his adventure stories about, you know, the day money stopped. You know, in New York City suddenly goes kind of primal, you know, primeval or whatever, and everyone's going a little bit crazy. And I also have a column about rare books. I have a friend who's a collector and has an incredible collection of 20th century first editions, and he is sort of cracking open the covers and the original artwork, and, you know, he's doing Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas as his first one with Ralph
wow.
Degman, original drawings on the inside. So it's like peeking inside, you know, first editions. Karen Lillis is doing a memoir about her years. She worked for almost 10 years at St. Mark's Bookshop in the East Village in New York, the famous bookstore, and sort of her memories of that. It's a memoir about, you know, the celebrities and the culture and the struggling as a writer, because all these things are kind of going dying in a sense.
Yes.
Well, we think they are, at least. So, you know, Undie is definitely, like, thinking about, you know, just putting the pause button on some of these changes, and so we're celebrating kind of like money, which is dead, and bookstores and first editions and newspapers, you know. So there's definitely a nostalgic element to all that.
Well, there's a salon
like a moratorium of culture in a way, like
yes.
or the nostalgia of culture, and it's, in a weird way, it's like science fiction memoir, you know. A speculative memoir in a way. But at the same time, I mean, actually, it wasn't until Tim just kind of outlined what's launching that there is kind of a theme there in a way. And that's really cool. But you know what? I guess you create and promote what you love. You
well,
know?
I do think, though, and I agree with you guys, and I worry about that salon atmosphere that we had for so many years of people congregating literally to salons back in the 19th century, but I think bookstores really kind of became that place to exchange ideas publicly, and I fear for that going away, but I also believe that with things like Skype, and right now I'm a Luddite having a three-way telephone call with you guys rather than doing
right.
Skype, but I kind of figured that someone's going to be on their cell phone, but I almost wonder if that kind of same salon exchange of ideas can happen electronically, you know, in forums like my own, like this podcast. And, you know, I always toy with the idea of having kind of a public square kind of show where I would allow even callers to call in and get even more, you know, just a big exchange of ideas and having kind of a discussion, a general discussion with a bunch of people. So maybe that's going to survive electronically, and maybe things like, you know, what you're doing with Undie Press can kind of foster that kind of forum.
Oh, absolutely. I think you know, the reports of the death of community and literacy and everything else that the World Wide Web has supposedly been killing off have been greatly exaggerated. I mean, you know, the average person, how many letters, you know, as you know, may sound cliche now already, but how many letters did you write before the internet, you know, or the
right.
World Wide Web? Now we're writing, you know, 100 letters a day to people and having whole conversations. These books from Harry Potter, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, all these other things, you know, so much of that was fueled through the technologies, you know, kids hearing about things and their parents and, you know, through websites and stuff. I mean, I think we're in a golden age of communication and literacy and the, you know, sort of like when, you know, Victorian era when the printing presses and newspaper printing got cheap and, you know, education, public education became more of a common thing and literacy rates rose. You know, I think this is a golden age, and once they kill, you know, net neutrality, or once they start, you know, maybe these apps are kind of a stalking horse for all that. Who the hell knows? When they shut it down and it becomes like AOL all over again, and we're kind of shut down from freely interacting with each other, which is definitely part of the plan for these big corporations. You know, who knows? I think we're going to be looking back at these days as a great golden era of community and communication. I really do.
And I agree with that, and I think that the golden age, is the key to the golden age, is access. Like, people have things to say. We're hungry to hear and listen and engage. And as long as that technology is providing access, we're just trying to figure out the delivery systems. We're trying to figure out how to make a living at it again. And now, a little guy like me, who, you know, years ago when I was begging to, you know, pencil the Fantastic Four from Marvel Comics and I wasn't good enough, I then kind of turned it around and created my own no permissions, no apologies policy. And that was also one of the reasons why I created Activate, was because I got to put up my stuff and see what happens. And I'm getting work at Marvel in D.C. And, you know, they not only do people need to see that you're committed to the stuff you love to do, but you get to learn in front of them. And that's always been a case, at least in comics, but I assume also with literature and everything else, all dark forms.
Very cool. I wanted to ask Dean about some stuff about Bored to Death. Second season is coming up in just a couple weeks. And I know at Baltimore you had a mini comic that ties into Bored to Death. And is it kind of a preview of the second season? How would you describe the mini comic?
Oh, okay. So Bored to Death season 2, I think, launches September 26th. And the work I did for that season, which comprises of 8 episodes, Jonathan Ames and I decided at HBO's behest to cobble together a, quote, mini comic that would be handed out by actors dressed as the Super Ray character, which is Ray Houston's comic book avatar. Ray Houston is played by Zach Galifianakis, who is loosely based on me. So this is kind of like this weird train of characterizations. But so we just cobbled together a narrative of the work that we put together, and then IDW published it, and it's being handed out. It was handed out to San Diego. I handed some out at Baltimore Comic Con. I'll be handing some out at SPX.
Fantastic.
And then at New York Comic Con.
Very good.
And basically, just to give you, season 2 of Death does have more comics content in it. A comic that the Ray Houston character creates in season 2 is pivotal to something that happens to him throughout the show, and culminates in the 8th episode at a Comic-Con type situation.
Oh, fantastic.
That was actually shot at the Brooklyn Lyceum, where King Khan takes place in Brooklyn.
That's wild, man. You know, I really felt like the show worked best when Ray, George, and Jonathan were all together.
Right.
And you know,
the ensemble, which I've always said is the three different versions of Jonathan Ames, is the sad clown, the adventurer, and then his future wise self that still seeks the thrill of adventure.
That's awesome. Hey, now, I saw the pictures on Facebook. Did you win an Emmy, or did the show win an Emmy? Exactly what happened?
Not only did I win an Emmy, but the show won an Emmy because I won an Emmy.
That's fantastic.
It was pretty crazy. It was for the opening title sequence that I was involved in. And, yeah, I got to go to the creative arts portion of the Emmy and go up on stage and give a little speech and kind of go a little nuts and go to the party. And I met some of the cast of Mad Men, and it was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
Who hosted those Emmys? Because I know those are,
you know,
the
what? Nobody awards. Hosted that proper. It was different guests would come up. In fact, the people who read my award and handed us our Emmy was Elizabeth Mitchell, who played Juliet on Lost,
The
co-creator. The co-creator Damon Lindelof, who co-created Lost, and that was pretty special.
And of course, Damon wrote the Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine miniseries as well,
which was a really good story. Actually, I enjoyed it a lot.
That's
cool.
You know,
it took 2 years or whatever to make it, but it was a great story nonetheless.
Excellent. So. And Tim, I wanted to ask about the story that you did on, or I should say, the series of essays that you did on Activate. Who was illustrating that stuff?
That was done by Jen Ferguson, actually a great painter, fine artist, and also illustrator in Brooklyn.
Really
and
cool.
And a close friend of Dean's as well. And We just started, you know, I was casting around for an illustrator. Adid said, well, you know, maybe Jim will be interested. We talked about some other people who were, you know, everyone had different commitments and stuff, and Jen just turned out was available, and just her work was beautiful, and I loved her work already, and yeah, so we collaborated on that for a better part of a year.
And you say that...
Yeah, Jen, I thought that Jen made a great compliment to Tim's words. They just make a great team. In fact, Tim, if you want to mention the Monster Mashup, it's going to be at Bergen Street Comics.
Oh, right. Well, that's another... they're right. Well, an offshoot of that after our collaboration is... actually, as well, is a funny story behind it, because it actually came out of another one of these little Facebook tweet kind of offhand conversations. But Jen and I then also collaborated. She wanted to do some updates of Monsters, classic Monsters. So she asked me to supply text for various Monsters. Like, she would talk about a few Monsters, and I'd kind of think about them, and then maybe, you know, give her a paragraph or something. All different styles, you know. One, I did the whole Frankenstein story in 4 haiku, you know, told from the point of view of the monster.
That's
So she put them into 3 with 3 illustrations and stuff like that, the Wolfman, and, you know, we're working on a bunch of others, and now we actually have a show coming up October 30th, actually, that's Saturday, the Halloween weekend. It's opening at Bergen Street Comics in Brooklyn.
Fantastic.
So we have a little art show happening there.
And it's called Monster Mashup? Is that the...
Monster Mashups, yep.
Very nice. That's terrific, man. Very, very cool. I'm psyched. I'll be at that New York con. I don't know. Tim, are you going to be able to make it? I know that's a few weeks before the thing you're doing at Bergen Street, but...
No, I got to be in Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Small Press Fair is at the very end of September. I'm going to Pittsburgh for that, and then going to New York, and I think I said my trip is just, the opening is just falling right between a couple other cons there, like between New York and then King Con.
Now, Dean, I know you've got stuff, as you say, you've got stuff coming up for DC and Marvel.
Okay, so I'll give you the quick rundown. So Cuba, My Revolution, which is written by Inverno Lactez and colored by Jose Villarubia, is coming out in about 2 weeks or week and a half.
Excellent.
From Vertigo. I'm actually looking at a copy right now, and I'm very proud of it. It's exactly what I wanted it to look like. I did something different this time. I only penciled the book, and Jose kind of digitally tweaked it and then added his painterly magic to it. And it's a two-color solution, gray and red.
Nice.
And what I wanted to achieve, because it takes place in the late 50s, early 60s of Cuba, what I wanted to achieve was to make it feel like as if you had taken a shovel and dug it into the dirt of Cuba and you pulled out this book. It really feels and looks like that. It's just a documentation of a different time and place. And it was, once again, whenever I do these memoirs, they're always such daunting tasks because I'm taking someone else's story and trying to turn them into, you know, comic books. I'm really excited and happy with this particular story and this project. So that's coming out in a couple of weeks. And then I recently had a 4-page story in Deadpool 1000, which I got to write and draw, and that was a lot of fun. Deadpool is kind of like Marvel Comics Looney Tune, like, you know, Bugs Bunny with a gun.
Exactly.
And that was kind of fun. And then I did a 4-page Wood God story featuring The Thing. It's kind of my little homage to Marvel 2-in-1. And it's kind of an epic story done in 4 pages for Strange Tales, which I think is coming out in the 3rd issue come December.
Very cool. Man,
I'm about to hop on to do an 8-page backup feature to Spider-Girl number 1. Written by Paul Tobin, and it features the early years of Fantastic Four with the young Spider-Girl.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I always remember that fine miniseries you did with Evan Dorkin about the thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah.
Yeah, that's a while back.
Nightfall on Yancey Street.
Exactly, man. That was,
that's right.
You see, and Tim's a fan, too. No, that was a wonderful story, and it's and it is.
Thanks.
It's always fun to see you dip back in the mainstream, and I'm glad that you're afforded the opportunity to play in the mainstream, because I know you're a big fan of the mainstream.
Has Evan Dorkin ever been seen again ever since that? I've never seen him
he's
in
around.
Person again, really. So you
and
say.
He's a dad, so, you know, he's got to be doing something. But,
yeah.
I'm really, like, I tap dance. You can't peg me, as you know.
Indeed.
I'm either doing some kind of memoir thing, or I'm working another medium for a little while, or I'm writing and drawing my own stuff.
Or winning Emmys, or
keep
whatever.
It interesting, you know?
Yeah, but that's great. And now writing novels for Tim's, for Undie Press and everything, I think this
my
is
first
terrific.
Prose novel. And honestly, I don't know if it's writing. It's definitely typing. But it might turn into writing later down the road. So,
no, I understand,
we'll
man. Jeez.
In fact, just to give you a little origin.
Please.
2 years ago, I was in the Catskills one summer, and every morning I woke up, I kind of gave myself a little one-hour exercise of just type something for about an hour and limit the page count. Keep them quick, rapid chapters. I was kind of inspired by Warren Ellis's novel, Crooked Little Vein, and how each of the chapters were kind of quick little chapters, but they kind of packed a punch. And I also adore noir. You know, Mickey Spillane, Richard S. Prather. I know Tim's really into noir as well. He actually gave me a early edition of, is it The Big Kill, Tim?
I think so, yeah, The Big Kill, right? That's a, yeah,
something
first
like that.
Edition. Well, I got it at a little bookstore upstate New York on a trip with my then-girlfriend before we were married, and I found it at this little bookstore. It was a Mickey Spillane first edition, first printing, nice condition. I got home, I gave it to Dean, and only then did I go online and find out it was worth like $1,500 fucking dollars. And I was like, Dean, can I have that back, please? I was an accident. I meant to give you the paperback version. So I gave him this really valuable, it cost me like, what, it's still in pencil, it was like $30 or something. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this
probably.
For Dean, you know. It was around his birthday or something, and I found that it's like really valuable first edition Mickey Spillane. I was like, oh, shit, you know. So,
it's awesome.
So you're
it's
set
awesome.
On your birthday presents for like the next 20 years, bro. That's all
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty set. But in a weird way, it also, that kind of comes around to explaining, like, you know, maybe some of the roots of, like, Undie Press and our relationship and keeping it real and acknowledging print and, you know, the original sources of all this stuff that we love.
Well, that's that's why I do these interviews, is to find out the inspiration behind the creativity that you guys do. And that is, you know, that's kind of where I want to go half the time, is to find out where the ideas come from and what, you know, what sparks the creativity. So this is great.
And one of the important things, I mean, Tim and I have actively been developing pitches with each other the last year and a half, because I really love Tim's writing, and it's a crime that more people may not know about Tim's writing, which is another reason why I think this is important. But we've developed several ideas that we're pitching right now, including one idea that I had about, you know how things die, like jobs die. You know, they go away, and sometimes you hear about a job that doesn't exist anymore because of either technology or because we don't use that anymore.
Sure.
Well, Tim and I, right now, I threw an idea in his lap. And he came right back at me with a fully developed, great solution. And I'll just put this in your head. It's called The Last Mortician. And so it's about what happens when that job starts to die. Because, you know, people just aren't dying anymore. They're just living, you know? And what happens when that job goes away and what that means. And it kind of has a nice little science fiction Twilight Zone twist to it.
They don't die anymore. They just turn into apps. And you just push a button when you want to see Uncle Fester again, you know? That's it, on your iPad.
Well, tell me about the audio version of Full of It. Now, you say you're gonna release chapters then online at Undie Press and everything. I mean, how?
Yeah, I've got the chapters, and I've got a nice little solution to. I've got each chapter embedded in the each post as a readable, you know, like inline PDF that you don't have to download it, or you can if you want, but you can just read it and scroll down if you want, and. It looks nice, and but you know, I got to say, I had only recorded one short collection of stories before that. I still don't have great equipment. I've got to actually upgrade, get a better microphone. I'm just using like a headset right now, and I got to say, I'm not too happy about my delivery. Honestly, is I'm a little bit, you know, it's a skill to learn how to read your own stuff, but I've definitely learned a lot from it. So yeah, it's fun. It's I do a lot of voices though. I do all the characters. There's a crazy English woman and some pseudo tough guys, you know, and there's some you know, junkies and drunks. It was just kind of the cast of characters, like the kind you would find in an East Village, you know, Alphabet City kind of bar scene. And so I do all the characters. That's my old theater days coming back to haunt me. And so I mean, I think it's a really fun story and read. And you know,
I love the story. And in fact, there's a character loosely based on me in there as well. So
yeah, very near the end. Small part. You got to get to about, you know, chapter 20 something before that'll happen. But,
something to look forward to, you know.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
I was going to ask, as we get closer, you know, what the best way is to monitor the debut of you know, Undie Press. I mean, is it to follow you on your Facebook page, Tim?
Facebook will be the thing right now. That's my main place, and that's where it'll be. I'll be announcing and then putting little daily, you know, links and updates and whatever. And I'm also at the same time I am trying to get my own personal site fixed up in better shape, because I just had kind of a placeholder site there. So I'm working on that at the same time, just to maybe launch them around the same time and clean up my digital act a little bit.
Okay, good. You have a page at Amazon. There's a Tim Hall page. And Full of It is there. Half Empty is there. And Triumph of the Won't.
Yes.
Triumph of the Won't is a personal fave of mine, I got to say. It's a great short story collection of Tim's that it's kind of like a greatest hits in a weird way for me, and I've read everything that Tim's written. I'm a big champion of that particular collection.
That's excellent. Well, so. I think people can even hear the tone of your voice and the attitude towards apps in terms of the voice that I think Tim has in his writing. So, you know, I think
absolutely.
That's cool. And also just the backdrop of 90s New York that seems to be the recurring backdrop for all of these stories.
Sure. So,
excellent.
Sure. And finally, I did want to mention also that in October there will be a book that I may not deserve to have yet, only because I'm 43 and I won't have anything interesting to say until I'm at least 50 years old. But there's a book coming out called Graphic New York City Presents Dean Hatsfield, The Early Years, that's being published by Desperado in conjunction with IDW, written by Christopher Irving. And Chris Irving is a writer of comics, has had this website up for about a year and a half now, profiling artists from rookie to veterans, you know, from the golden age to now, and with photographer Seth Kushner. And he put together basically a 240-page introspective / retrospective. The retrospective is all a ton of my early comics up to about 2006, right before I launched the work I did at Activate and beyond. And the introspective is about a 40-page interview / essay that Christopher Irving put together. And it covers a lot of, like, the 80s comic scene, as it were, right up to the launch of Activate. And it's a nice piece of history. So that'll be coming out in October.
Oh, that's great, man. Hey, fire up, if you don't mind, I'd love to see a preview copy.
Oh, yeah, I can have Chris send you a PDF of the preview copy.
That'd be terrific, man, because I'm aware of Chris's work, and it's always fun to look back at some of the stuff that you did, and I imagine some early Billy Dogma will be part of the collection.
All the early Billy Dogma, all the early semi-autobiographical, obviously not the stuff that... Not the franchise stuff necessarily because of rights and everything,
sure.
But I did enough of my own stuff that you can, look back on, hopefully, possibly. And like I said, there's a lot of insight into my growing up as a budding cartoonist. And full disclosure, Jen Ferguson, who is Tim's artist on Uplift of Positive Symbols and collaborator on Mashups, is my girlfriend.
Oh, very nice.
So I just thought I should mention that.
That's fair. It's my first opportunity to talk to you, Dean, since Harvey Pekar passed away this summer.
Oh, right.
And
right.
And yeah, if you're up to any thoughts on the collaboration and the friendship that you had with him.
You know, the passing of Harvey Pekar was definitely a shock. Definitely too young to go away. Did not expect him to die at age 70. I thought I'd be reading like every mundane thing that ever happened to him for the next, 30 years. My collaboration with him on The Quitter basically put my career on the map at that point in 2005. And even though I kind of helped resuscitate the wrong word, but you know what I mean, like kind of, the American Splendor went through ebbs and flows.
Yes.
Ups and downs. And I was really happy to have thought of helping him get this movie made when I suggested the idea to movie producer Ted Hope to create an American Splendor movie, which I think definitely helped his career, give it another kind of charge, another booster shot. And as a thank you to me, and to do something substantial, was The Quitter. So I think we made a pretty interesting collaboration together. Sometimes people used to complain because, I would get a little more hyperbolic, I guess, in my solutions, drawing his stories. And, it's almost like we were like a cross between Raymond Carver and Jack Kirby. I think I've actually used that anecdote before. But, Harvey was genuine. He could only do one thing, and that was Harvey Pekar. And you got to love the guy for it. And the one thing is I was struggling with the fact that, his mortal form was dead. He is immortal in his work. And
sure.
The only story he didn't get to write was his last one,
Yeah,
and
no kidding.
Meanwhile, don't worry about it because there's a ton of other stuff coming out from the Pekar Project, from collaborations he was doing with his wife, Joyce Bradner. There's like two or three other books that are being finished right now that he had written. So, there'll be lots of great posthumous work.
Oh, that's...
he's almost like Tupac. He's like the comics industry's Tupac,
I want to actually jump in and say something.
Please,
about that. Because, Dean, I know you said, I remember all that time leading up to The Quitter and everything. You said, kindly how, that gave your career such a big boost, and it certainly did. But, your efforts on his behalf and the little part you played certainly in the making the connection there and helping get American Splendor, the movie, off the ground, really did so much for Harvey, too, And
oh, and he
was such a huge success. And it really, I mean, for such a cranky son of a bitch, you probably
yeah.
put him out on about as happy and as high a note he could have gone out on in his career. I mean,
oh,
the guy
definitely.
Was at the top of his career. And that's the way anybody wants to go. After all those years of struggle, I mean, those last 5 years or so, or whatever it was exactly, 6 years, were, tremendous. So arguably the highest points of his life and career and a real, real pinnacle for him. So, I mean, I think you definitely deserve a lot of credit for that.
Well, thanks a lot. Thank you.
I would agree, and I would ask also, because he is infamous for his cranky demeanor. But, I wonder if you can, for a second, Dean, talk about you know, the non-screaming conversations you had. Because I think the good news is I was really excited last year at Printer's Row at in Chicago, the Chicago Tribune Book Fair. I got to see two of his latest creations, both his adaptation of Studs Terkel's Working and that wonderful collection he did on the Beats. I really am kicking myself that I didn't, you know, try to arrange an interview in time to talk to him about those things. But that's what I mean. I mean, I'm really glad that there are examples of the work, because it sometimes worried me that the character of Harvey Pekar overshadowed the really great work that he did. And I mean, not only telling his own story, but his jazz criticism and works like Working and the Beats were really great, you know, comic books. And I'm glad that he was able to get that stuff out, along with being, you know, the cartoon character that we all enjoyed, you know, seeing as well.
Right. No, I mean, and that's the one thing I'll maintain is, like, okay, it's cool that he wrote about jazz and the Beats and other stuff, and he's got a book coming out about Israel, but it was always under the lens of Harvey Pekar. You couldn't escape, you know, the man that was writing this stuff. Some people can disassociate and just write about something or historical facts or whatever. Harvey just couldn't do that. It wasn't his style, you know. And if you were picking up some history book, but it was going to be written by Harvey, he definitely had his voice in there as well. And that was part of you know, his lexicon. You know, that was part of his legend, was that in a weird way he couldn't do anything but Harvey, and even the stuff he loved, you know, he injected his sensibility into it. So
it reminded me of a guy like Oliver Stone with his movies, because it really there's a guy that, you know, both guys were really affected by the generation they came from, and they can't help but be part of their own stories. And you really are getting Harvey's view of the, and that's why the Beats was so exciting to read, because it really was like, here's a guy of that generation talking about creative contemporaries and stuff. And I thought that was really neat.
No, that's a really good point you make, and I had never thought of that before, but that's a really good way of describing how Harvey did what he did. That's really cool. But, yeah, no, so, I mean, bottom line, as much as I'm saddened by his death and that he's gone, all I got to do is pick up one of the damn things he wrote, and he's right there again, you know? So,
absolutely. Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Very cool.
All right. Well, thank you.
No, hey, man. Thank you, and thanks for helping bring him back to the prominence. I mean, I remember those Letterman appearances, and, you know, I was always curious to read American Splendor in the early '80s after seeing him on Letterman and stuff. But like I say, like you guys just said, the movie really brought him back to good prominence, and it gave him the opportunity to have new opportunities to create new material. So that's terrific.
And again, to go back to the theme of what we've been talking about, especially with Undie Press. And you know, Activate. I mean, you know, you grow up. When I grew up, you go to the newsstand, you pick up a superhero comic, and in my case, I was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to write and draw these things. And it wasn't until I picked up an American Splendor as a teenager that I realized comics could also be something else. They could be something that either you could create your own heroes, or you could write about your own life. And again, that stems, and that you know, through line made it to. Prompt me to do something like an Activate, prompts Tim Hall to do something like Undie Press. I mean, that's one of our examples, one of our leaders, you know, the pioneer of semi-autobiographical comics, you know, in Harvey Pekar. So.
That's very cool, man. Excellent. Well, all right. Well, then, you know, as we're speaking, we're just days away from some of this stuff premiering. So we'll look forward to the debut of Undie Press online and look forward to the IDW collection of the early Dean Haspiel work, but also the Vertigo book, Cuba.
It's called Cuba, My Revolution.
Thank you, sir.
By Inverna Lopez and with Jose Villarubia, and that's coming out from Vertigo like the first or second week of September.
Excellent, man. Very cool. Guys, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sorry it took so long from that night in November at Quimby's. But
that's all right, man. I'm glad to catch up now.
All right, very cool. And stay in touch, and please let us know what developments are coming up, because, you guys represent a lot of my favorite indie voices. So it's good to hear from you guys and know what's going on and know what venues we can see new work from both of you.
All right. Thanks so much, John.
All right, we did. All right. Do we hit everything you guys wanted to hit?
I think so.
Cool. Excellent.
Yep, I thought it was a great conversation.
The only thing I didn't get to say, Dean, the only thing I didn't get to say was that actually I think all of your work looks like it's been buried under the dirt in Cuba for 50 years. I just wanted to get that in there, but you're too on message all the time.
Nice.
You just keep going.
Nice.
I wondered if that was a bad analogy.
I was like, no, wait, but wait. I had my arm, I was raising my hand, and I'm like, fuck, they can't see me. I'm not on Skype. I've got my hand raised.
No, I'll find a way of putting that in. Don't worry about it. We're still rolling tape. It's all right.
All right.
Beautiful. Oh, well, that's funny.
Well, thanks.
That'll be in the extras.
Nice talk with Dean Haspiel and Tim Hall. Don't forget, Undie Press, the website, is already up and running. Make sure you check it out, undiepress.com. And there is tons of free content there. There are several free audiobook chapters. Dean's first serialized novel, prose novel, is happening right there at Undie Press. Lots of really neat stuff. And Tim has that interview as well with John Strasbaugh. You want to check that out. All at undiepress.com. Today's episode of Word Balloon was brought to you by Audible.com. For you, the listeners of Word Balloon, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. Today we're recommending The 10-Cent Plague, The Great Comic Book Scare, and How It Changed America from David Hodju. An unbelievable book. Like I said, if you remember what shut down EC Comics, the scare that really drove horror and crime out of the comic book business for over 20 years, it's all documented by David Hodju in this great book, The 10-Cent Plague. And now you can get it for free. And it's, no obligation. If you decide after 14 days you want to give up your service, you get to hang on to that audiobook for free. It's happening through audible.com to download your free audiobook. And again, it plays on anything. It plays on your iPad, your iPhone, your Droid phones, desktop computer, laptop, you name it. It's a free audiobook. To download your free one today, go to audiblepodcast.com/wordballoon. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/wordballoon. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon today. More great episodes coming as we continue our march to New York. Again, Dean Haspiel will be there handing out his mini comic at the IDW booth based on what's going on Bored to Death. Don't forget Bored to Death coming back to HBO September 26th. A very funny show inspired by the stories of Jonathan Ames and dotted all over the place with the art of Dean Haspiel. Check it out. Thanks again for listening. Any questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Don't forget our own products like the Word Balloon app is available at iTunes. There's a separate app available as well for our companion show, the Aw Yeah Podcast with Art Baltazar and Franco Aureliani, the co-creators of Tiny Titans, soon to be working on Young Justice for DC. Two very funny guys. If you want to check a sample of the show, go to wordballoon.com and you can hear the latest episode. Or even better, check out the Aw Yeah app, which is available at the iTunes store for just $1.99, and enjoy their show, the Aw Yeah Podcast with Art and Franco. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.